Some days you're the bug, some days you're the windshield, and some days you just want to kick back and listen to a little Backtracks Aerosmith Revisited. My name is Corey Morissette, joined as always. I don't know what that was, but I'm joined as always by John Mariano. How you doing, John?
That was me trying to get the information for our sponsor, forgetting that the speaker on my phone was on.
Oh.
Because I don't know how technology works, Corey. I'm doing great. I'm a little tired. I'm a little bit fuzzy, but I'm here and I am excited to talk about this band.
Well, I'm excited that you're actually looking up the sponsor copy early. So we'll go to our co-host, the one and only Scott K. Haskins. Scott, how you doing tonight, my friend?
Hello and welcome. Oh, wait, wrong show. How are you guys doing? I'm doing great. Excited to dig into another song for one of the bands that I am greatly learning a lot of information about. Very happy.
Have you been enjoying the ride so far, Scott, as you're kind of delving into the deeper dive of Aerosmith here?
I really have. And I'm understanding so much more about their music as I understand where the band was when they were making each album, as far as the relationships, the, you know, being in and out of different services for help. And it really is shedding a lot of light on which songs I do and don't like more.
Well, that's excellent. And we got some eclectic songs on the dice this week. But before we do that, let's kick it back to John, and he can tell us all about our good friend Ken Knapsack.
Ken Knapsack, over at the Knapsack Network, they're doing a show called The Blathering, where Ken does a little bit of rambling, a little bit of ranting. It's part joy and happiness, part anger, but a whole lot of Ken. And he's giving his thoughts on society, his thoughts on taboo subjects, his thoughts on pizza over at 7-Eleven. He'll be sharing a lot of his thoughts and feelings, but it's a very funny slice of life, and also some very poignant views on society today. So if you get a chance, go over to the Knapsack Network, follow it on a podcast feed, and listen to The Blathering.
And this is going to piss off John Mariano, but in Canada, anyway, pizza at 7-Eleven, not that bad. Scott Haskins, speaking of not that bad, let's talk about our brothers and sisters in the Deep Dive Podcasting Network.
Well, I'm kind of sad all the years that I worked at 7-Eleven. I got stabbed. I got maced, but we never had pizza.
And now if you had pizza, you'd probably be dead. Because if they're going to stab you and mace you just over taquitos or whatever they were making at that time, pizza, you'd be a dead man right now.
Yeah, but it would have been a way to go out. So over at the Deep Dive Podcast Network, we have some absolutely fantastic shows. We have Sav, Nick, Steve, and Mark at the Rock Roulette Podcast. We have Quinn at N Volume for All. Kevin and Randy at the Seaside Pod Review. The same Kevin does the Tom Petty Project. We have Greg and Jonathan at So Far, So Pod, So What. We have Clay and Rye at North by South Podcast. George and Hattie over at the Judas Priest Cast. Ben and Sam at Universally Speaking, the Red Hot Chili Peppers Podcast. Daniel and Josh at the Diary of the Mad Men, the Ultimate Aussie Podcast. We have Eric and Jonathan at the Maiden A to Z Podcast. Andy and Matt do Hawk Binge. Paul, Joe, and David do at In the Lap of the Pods. We have Rye at Sabbath Bloody Podcast. Terry T-Bone Mathley at T-Bone's Prime Cuts on the Other Side. The Simple Man at Skinnered Reconsidered. Nate and John at the Deep Purple Podcast. I do a little show called Uriah Heep, the Magician's Podcast, who I just found out I have two more very long seasons to do. So more coming at you soon. We have our own Corey does a show with Mark Kammeyer called And the Podcast Will Rock All Things Van Halen. And our buddies right here, John and Corey, do another show called Backtracks Theme Music. Lots of great things, just about everything you could want to hear, except a Debbie Gibson podcast.
Well, you know, there's still time is all I'm going to say, looking at Scott Haskins. I know you have a genuine connection to one Debbie Gibson. So hopefully that'll happen for you, my friend. You're talking about Backtracks Theme Music. We just recorded one, geez, about 15 minutes ago on a song from one of your guys' favorite movie, Mallrats. That was a lot of fun. So be on the lookout for that one. But tonight we're talking Aerosmith. We're talking mixtapes. We got two of them. Side A, all the deep cuts. Side B, live track. Side C, all-time top nine. And side D is our nasty cuts. Those are any three songs we want to save. Last week, of course, we covered Janie's Got a Gun live from A Little South of Sanity. And we were so underwhelmed, we didn't even put it on an empty slot on the live track side of side B of the mixtapes. Kind of shocking, but go back and listen to that episode to get our take on it. Just a little underwhelmed on that one. But that means we're going back to the Die Here Tonight, and we've got six great songs to go potentially go over here, including Devil's Got a New Disguise, You See Me Crying, Dream On from Live Bootleg, Legendary Child, Deuces Are Wild, and I'm Down, the Beatles cover from Permanent Vacation. John Mariano, what kind of week you having? What are you in the mood for to listen to tonight?
Well, it's weird because I'm having a pretty good week. My kids, I was trying to figure it out. My kids have been binge watching That 70s Show, and this I'm going to tie this into Aerosmith pretty quickly. Whatever season they're on, opens with they go into Eric's basement, and it's all the boys, and Ashton Kutcher's there playing Kelso. He's holding Aerosmith's live bootleg in his hand, the vinyl, and convinces he pulls some pranks on them. But I thought it was so cool, like they're really trying to set the time and place, and they're using Aerosmith because it's I guess it's Eric's favorite band on the show. So I thought it was really really just a cool bit. So wanted to share that with you guys because it's they're in pop culture, they're everywhere.
Well, and we have a live bootleg cut on the dice here tonight. So are you hoping we roll a little Dream On here tonight?
100%. It's one of my favorite songs of all time. It's not necessarily my favorite version of the song. Not to say it's a bad version of the song. It's just the versions of the song. Like some songs you hear live and you're like, oh, the live version's better or the studio version's better. For me, it's they're all great, and it's just greater or greatest. It's like that kind of scale. It's not, nothing's good. Nothing even reaches as low as good with Dream On.
I hear you. Scott, what are you in the mood for here today?
You know, I was just realizing that the two songs I have picked that are on the dice have been on there for a very long time, but I feel like we need some redemption from last week. We need a good live song to put in one of those two empty slots on the live side. So I'm going to vote for Dream On.
All right. Well, guess what? That's three of us. I'm hoping we get a little Dream On here tonight, too. But what do you say, Steven's warming up his pipes. Let's toss this dice. Toss of the dice! And we come up with Dream On from Live Bootleg. There you go. You'd think it was rigged, but I swear to God it's not. I'll post a video. People don't believe me. We actually rolled Dream On from Live Bootleg. Scott, maybe tell us a little bit about your history with Dream On.
I honestly can't remember a time when I did not know this song. This might be the very first Aerosmith song that I ever heard. I think it was the 45, and it was one that we used to play on our stereo in the living room growing up, the studio version. Great song. I'm not familiar with the live version, so I'm going to be curious to get into it, but I can tell you the studio song is an absolute gem.
Johnny, anything you want to mention before we play this track here tonight?
Yeah, I mean, it really got on my radar with that. Like, I was an Aerosmith fan, but Dream On in particular, you know, got on my radar with the success of the orchestra version, which we will hear at some point on this podcast. Which just blew my mind watching a band play with an orchestra for the first time, especially to this song. But I love this song. Like, I can remember where I was, like, watching that video on MTV. But the live version, I also adore. And I've heard them play it live, heard them sing it live. It's a great, great song. It's like one of the great ballads of all time.
Do you think that we should explain what a 45 is for our fans that maybe aren't familiar with older records?
Oh, good call. We should maybe do that. Yeah. Go ahead, Scott.
So for a while in the 90s, we had these really cool things called single cassettes where you would have one song on one side, you flip it over, there's a different song on the other side. So you would have like a hit and a B-side. 45s were kind of the same thing. Sometimes what the record companies would do is they would have the album, but they would hold one song back just so they could release it as a single and get more sales with a B track from the album on the flip side. So they were a little bit smaller. They were about 7 inches as opposed to the 12-inch LP. And you had to have a little disc to put in the middle of the 45 so that it would actually play, because they came with a hole that was way too big for some reason that I'll never understand.
And what was that little disc called? Does anybody know?
I knew it at one point. It's a name that made no sense, if I remember right, like just something completely unrelated.
Was it a spindle?
It might have been a spindle.
Or a spider?
Well, I know that after a while, they started just filling that in and just having like the LP size hole so that you didn't need that. At least some record companies were doing that.
I know... Old Hands Off, he's listening. He's going to have to tell us on Twitter what that thing is called, because I don't remember offhand.
I have a little bit of trivia for you.
Okay.
If Aerosmith didn't add Dream On to the first Aerosmith album, we would not be on this podcast tonight. Dream On saved Aerosmith as a band, because their first album sold so poorly, mainly because Columbia Records... I'm pulling this off of the Song Facts website, but mainly Columbia Records didn't promote the album, because Bruce Springsteen, they released the Bruce Springsteen album the week before, and they were so hyper-focused on that, they didn't promote this album. So Aerosmith's, I think it was their management, convinced Columbia to release this as a single. And it reached 59 on the U.S. charts, and that's what got them to be profitable enough to warrant more albums.
Very interesting. So far, the only thing I've seen is it is called a 45 adapter, which seems really anticlimactic. It should have a better name than that.
There is a better name. Old Hands Off, you're listening, please let us know. But before we play the song, guys, how many times do we think Dream On was performed by Aerosmith? Spoiler alert, it's a lot. John Mariano, let's start with you.
925.
All right, Scott Haskin.
I'm going to go 1,050.
1,658 times, according to setlist.fm, Aerosmith has played this song.
I would imagine the only times that they didn't play it were before it was released.
Yeah.
That was it's on their first album, so they probably didn't play much before it was released as Aerosmith.
Anyway, right? According to setlist.fm, they played it for the first time April 14th, 1973, at Millis High School in Millis, Massachusetts. And the last time they played it was November 29th, 2022, at the Dolby Live at Park MGM, Las Vegas, Nevada, during their residency.
Was that show their first show? Because I thought they were around before 73.
Let's see.
That's probably as far back as the website goes.
Yeah, and that could very well be, yeah.
Yeah.
What do you say? Let's spin a little Dream On. We're going to go all the way back to Louisville, Kentucky, July 3rd, 1977. And live bootleg, this is Dream On. A little weird not to hear piano at the beginning there. That was Joe on guitar, was it not? Or Brad, one of the two. But all I heard was guitar there. Anybody pick up any piano on that one?
I didn't hear any. And It was a little bit choppy. That guitar solo just kind of seemed to stop and then come back in. That felt a little weird, but I like the part. I like the rearrangement of it. It feels really good.
Well, and one of the conceits of Live Bootleg was we wanted to sound like a live bootleg, so they didn't go in and touch up anything. That might have been a section. Like you said, it kind of sounds like he kind of stopped, you know, maybe mishit something or, you know, some little mistake happened during the performance of that, but they left it in, which I actually kind of dig. I don't need to hear perfection from a live cut. If you want to put in a little color like that, that's fine. But nowadays, whenever you see Dream On, it starts with Steven Tyler on a piano. And it was just kind of surprising that way back in 1977, they did the intro on guitar.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was digging around that website, and Joe Perry was not a fan of the song when it first came out, because you made your bones back then playing fast songs, playing loud songs. And he even said, your 1973 might not be that far off, Corey. Because they didn't play it very often live early because it's a very slow song. And even hearing how it opens here, it feels to me as they get deeper into their career and they start getting higher production, bringing the piano into it, I like what they do here, but I love what they do later on when they start bringing the piano and stuff into it. It's a different element. It's a different song with that. I almost feel like it needs it.
Yeah, it definitely has a different feel to it. And if you were to get this on 45, you might need to use a spider.
It was
introduced by the RCA Corporation to play it.
I knew it. It was spindle or spider. It's one of the two.
Save your hate mail, people.
Every time I look in the mirror, all these lines of my face getting clearer. The past is gone.
Boy, doesn't Steven sound great right now? Just nice and gritty and just really like he's singing from his heart.
And that's the one thing that's missing from the studio version, because he's singing in that kind of, he's trying to sound like a blues guy on that first album, and he's singing in a different voice. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, it really takes away from that album for me. But when you hear those songs from the first album done live, they really come to life. And I can't agree more. I think he sounds fantastic on this.
Did they ever re-record this after his voice changed?
Well, and it didn't really change. He did that intentionally.
Did they ever like re-record a studio version after he went to this style of singing?
I don't think so. A studio version, no.
I believe that anything else is live that you'll hear. Okay. But it's funny because the original version, like I love a lot of things about how it's produced. I love the you know, the instruments on it a lot. This version though is giving me the Steven Tyler voice I want to hear. And it's so much more soulful with this voice.
All right. I think I might have to find a new lyric site, because that line is that you've got to lose to know. And they wrote, you've got the blues to know. Which makes considerably less sense.
Misheardlyrics.com.
Yeah.
Well, while we're away from the song, I'd just like to point out how great the bass guitar sounds on this version. It's really prominent in the mix. Maybe a little too prominent, because I think it's kind of burying the guitars just a little, but I love the sound of it.
It's definitely prominent, but I don't know that I feel like it's too prominent, because since I'm missing that piano here, I think having the bass more up front is filling some of that for me. I was reading that they did introduce the piano into their live shows to give Steven a little bit of a break from running around so much. So it probably makes sense as they got older to bring the piano in and be like, hey, dude, just like take a deep breath. Sit down behind this thing for about 5 minutes.
You know, and I have to wonder if it was a full acoustic piano, because when I saw Emerson, Lake and Palmer play back in the late 90s, Keith Emerson had a full grand piano out on stage, but there was nothing in it. It was the frame of a piano, and an Elisa's QS8 keyboard was inside of it, because them traveling around carrying the weight of a piano versus the shell of a piano would be a big difference and much less cost prohibitive.
Holy crap. You learn something new every time. And when I saw Aerosmith at the Minot State Fair, I'm watching this grand piano come from, beneath the stage. They have like a trap door at the end of the thrust, and the piano comes up, and I'm thinking, geez, you got to haul a grand piano around on every show. It might have been a shell.
Wow. It might have been.
Scott, you're a genius.
I just watched 75-year-old Elton John wheeling a piano around the stage. Are you trying to tell me that that might have been an empty shell?
Oh, no. For Elton John, I would think that's a real damn piano. That's Elton John, sir.
Yeah. Well, and it's well known, too, that when you would see a wall of Marshall amplifiers, most of them had nothing in them.
Right. To the point where I think Rush made fun of that on their later tours, where they had just washing machines. They had chicken rotisseries, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
We had another little guitar, kind of like a mispluck there a little bit. I really kind of like that. And even though Joe said we're going for like a live bootleg kind of feel, I think the mix on this is pretty damn good.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I get the idea of it, but it's like whether it was a bootleg or not, the performance should be the same. You know, I wonder if they didn't throw a couple of extra little flubs in there to kind of play that up a little bit, because they're better players than that. But I do like it. I do like that it's raw, that it's not corrected, that it really just kind of makes you feel like you're there, as opposed to listening to a cleaned up or overdubbed live album, which you're like, yeah, this is kind of too perfect. You can't tell me that nobody made a single mistake all night.
Well, this would have been like a later Rocks tour, I believe. Because Draw the Line came out later in 1977, so the band was pretty fucked up in this stage in their history. So, you get the odd mistake. It's understandable.
Well, they're still playing a damn good version of this song so far, if they're fucked up.
Gotta love all the things you do, motherfucker, as opposed to pretty mama.
What I love, and we give Steven a lot of shit for like singing over guitar solos and stuff. This version of this song is why he's one of the greatest vocalists of all time. Like, you're hearing every bit of air he is filling, to me, is incredible in this version. And he's not overpowering what's going on around him, but he's complimenting it in such great ways. And even the way he threw the motherfucker in there and changed the tone of his voice as he said it, it's beautiful.
I agree. I do give him a lot of shit. I will admit that. But I have to say, this is one of the best performances I've heard from him on all the live stuff that we've covered so far.
And lyrically, going all the way back to 1973, their first album, and he's coming up with passages like "Half my life's in books written pages, live and learn from fools and from sages. You know it's true. All the things come back to you." That's a great verse.
Killer.
Do you know what the song's about?
It's about pickles. Dill pickle chips? No.
How about you, Scott? What's your guess?
Yeah, I've never really paid enough attention to the lyrics to even think about it.
So it's about all the shit and everything you have to push through as an artist at this point in your career. And Stephen was writing it from a young artist's point of view who had to eat a lot of shit on his way up the ladder and telling himself to dream on, to dream big. Right. And it's almost like reassuring yourself, if you dream big, big things will come. Mm-hmm. And that's I was reading, that's the meaning of the song. Stephen said that in an interview at some point. I never had really thought about it, but if you look at the lyrics, it really starts to paint that picture.
Yeah, I can see that.
Dream until your dreams come true. Mm-hmm. All right. I've heard that section done better in later performances, but I wanted to get Scott's take on that solo section there.
Yeah, that was a little rough. I like the part where you could tell he turned his reverb pedal on because all of a sudden he was about 100 feet away. But I like that little sound that we heard from Steven Tyler going into it, where it was like he'd pulled the mic away from his mouth and he was in the distance, and then the guitar went in the distance just after that. That was kind of a nice partnership, but yeah, that was a little rough. I would imagine that's been done better, but I like some of the ideas in there.
It's definitely, there is a perfect version of the song, and I won't spoil it, but we've all heard it before. And we'll get to it at some point. I like some of the imperfections here. I'm definitely missing the piano on this version, though.
In the version you're talking about, I'm going to guess has a piano and maybe some other instruments.
It might even have a triangle in there at some point. Ooh. I want to put in a request because I love this part. I love this part sung by Steven. But I just found out there is an Aerosmith tribute, Not the Same Old Song and Dance, released in 1999. And Ronnie James Dio sings this song with Yngwie Malmsteen playing guitar on it. I kind of want to hear that version.
I kind of want to hear that too. That'd be interesting.
I didn't even know this thing existed. I'm looking at the track listing now. You got like Mark Slaughter doing Back in the Saddle, Ted Nugent on Ragdoll, Vince Neil doing Chip Away the Stone, Jack Blades and Tommy Shaw doing Sweet Emotion. Oh my God. Why don't I have this on vinyl? What the fuck is this? Stephen Percy from Rat doing Toys in the Attic?
Oh, wow. This sounds like a treasure trove. Great find, John.
Greg Bissonette played drums on Dream On with Ronnie James Dio and Yngwie Malmsteen.
Hmm.
Oh man, I'm gonna try and look that up as soon as this version's done. That's amazing.
I didn't know that Ronnie and Yngwie ever did anything together, so that's pretty fascinating.
Ronnie James Dio, Yngwie Malmsteen, Stu Hamm, Greg Bissonette, and Paul Taylor.
Hmm.
All right, now I gotta try and fucking find that. Let's keep listening to Dream On while you look it up.
it's amazing because very few times over a career of a vocalist do they get better at the screaming as they get older. And I promise you, about 10 to 12, maybe 15 years after the release of this version of this song, Steven gets better with those screeches. They get cleaner, they get tighter, and they get higher somehow. And like, I'm not even kidding. Like, you guys know exactly what I'm talking about. And it's like, as good as that is, it's amazing to me that as he gets older, he gets stronger as a performer.
Well, yeah, but in this case too, I mean, certain substances may have dulled his abilities at certain points, and then he gets better, and then he's not as good, and then he gets better and isn't as good.
Scott, I'm a huge Led Zeppelin fan. Are you telling me that substances weren't involved with that band?
Never. Right? If you guys could see the look that John shot me while I was saying that, I wish I would have screen grabbed it.
There are so many bands I can think of and performers I can think of and what they were on. And like for instance, Guns N' Roses is much cleaner and soberer now than they were when they were performing. And I gotta take the drugged up Guns N' Roses from the heyday over today. So while I would love to agree with your reasoning, I don't know that's the case.
I'll accept that. What I'll also accept is there's two really cool parts about this section of the song that, especially live, you could just go off and do all kinds of things. Whether you're ending with the line, "Dream until your dreams come true," and then they play that instrumental section and you could do, you know, a different drum fill. And then you go into the next part, which is the "Dream on, dream on." And then that part plays, that instrumental part plays after that, and you can go into a cool drum fill. You could keep that going all night and just change it up every time and make it interesting. I love songs that really translate well to the stage, and I think this is one of the greats.
If I could cherry pick doing a Super Bowl halftime show and like fixing it or whatever, I would have had Aerosmith, when they did the Super Bowl halftime show, get to that drum fill. And you know how they bring guests out? Not finish the song, but bring out Soundgarden and start playing Spoon Man during the drum fill and go right into all of Spoon Man and then come back and finish Dream On.
There you go. That'd be interesting. Well, Corey, you're a drummer. What do you think about, you know, if you were behind the kit on a song like this, you could come up with a different fill for every pass.
Oh, without a doubt. You want those drums to be as shimmery as possible, as John taught me the proper terminology. They have to be shiny and shimmery. So yeah, without a doubt. I'm sure you guys were talking about something. I wasn't listening. I was looking more into this fucking tribute album. It's at the lineup. Jesus Christ. Can we do an entire show just on this album? Like, the first track is Back in the Saddle, as performed by Mark Slaughter, Albert Lee, Rudy Sarzo, and Frankie Benali. Like, come on. Like, half a Quiet Riot with Albert Lee and Mark Slaughter doing Back in the Saddle? Like, I'm rigid right now. I can't believe this thing existed. I had no fucking idea.
No, that's we could do a show on that. Or a couple of shows if we needed to break it, because I have a feeling there's a lot to dig into in those songs.
You know what? A Jack Blades, Tommy Shaw, Mike Inez, Randy Castillo version of Sweet Emotion intrigues the hell out of me. Or Fee Waybill, Steve Lukather, Tim Bogert, and Tommy Aldridge doing Walk This Way.
I guarantee you there's a lot of double bass drumming on that song.
Guaranteed. We've got a little Edgar Winter. Listen to this. Same old song and dance. Jack Russell from Great White, Jeff Baxter, Jeff Pilson, Bobby Blotzer, and Edgar Wright. It's crazy.
This is a very, very good find, I have to say. I'm really curious to hear this.
And it's on Apple Music. So when we finish Dream On, which is, like you said, one of the most iconic live songs of all time, I'm going to bring up the Ronnie James Dio Yngwie Malmsteen version.
Oh, sweet.
Sing with me, sing All right, that's Dream On from Live Bootleg. I was missing the gong at the end. We sometimes get a gong on that final kind of hit. Wasn't there on this one, but you know what? I'm going to kick off the voting here. We have open spots on the Live Tracks version of the mixtape. My God, who the hell is going to downvote Dream On? I don't care what version. It's going on something, right? So I'm voting Dream On. Absolutely. This version belongs on Live Tracks, and the only way it leaves is if we find a better version of Dream On. John?
Yeah, about a live version of Dream On that doesn't find its way onto a different side of the mixtape. I have a feeling that this mixtape's going to carry at least two versions of this song, as it should.
Wow, that's bold. That's very bold. I mean, yeah, obviously it's got to go on there. There's no way this song does not end up. One version or other has to be on this mixtape to represent Aerosmith.
All right, so now we have eight tracks on side B, the Live Tracks portion of the mixtape. They are Sweet Emotion from A Little South of Sanity, Mother Popcorn from Live Bootleg, What It Takes from A Little South of Sanity, Lord of the Thighs from Live Bootleg, Toys in the Attic from Classics Live 2, Kings and Queens from Classics Live 1, Train Kept a Rollin' from Classics Live 1, and joining the mixtape this week, Dream On from Live Bootleg. But what do you say? I found the version of Dream On with Ronnie James Dio, Yngwie Malmsteen, Greg Bissonette, and company. Let's give it a quick listen here.
And Lethal Weapon.
God, this is magical. Aside from Yngwie jerking off all over the intro to the song, like, Dio sounds fucking great. I'm going to shuttle forward a little bit here. What do you guys think of that?
Well, I mean, you can't get away without some Yngwie DNA all over you anytime that you listen to anything he does. But yeah, and I like it. I like his first couple albums a lot. I did reviews of them on my show, but he is very much hey, look what I can do kind of guy. He's too flashy for my taste, but I like the songs on his first couple albums. When you've got a singer like Ronnie James Dio, you want to start hearing Ronnie James Dio as quickly as possible. And I feel that if we would have had another 30 seconds that we would have allowed Yngwie to play, he would have, you know, you got to get to Ronnie as quick as possible.
I have no problem with Ronnie playing, even on this song where it's probably a mismatch to have him playing guitar on this particular song. It's kind of a wonderful tree. It's interesting listening to their two styles try to mesh together. God, Ronnie's so fucking good, though. So nice good.
Absolutely.
I feel like most singers would be breaking a sweat or exhausted with the range of notes that Dio is hitting here. And I feel like he's kind of doing it so effortlessly, like he's barely stretching before he goes out to play, he's running laps backwards around people that are sprinting hard to keep up. It's amazing.
Not even trying, right? Just doing his thing. And there's Yngwie showing the world, I know all the notes. Look, here they all are.
Yeah, you know, and I think in a section like this that we just heard, when you're playing those filler spots, it's okay to play that way. At the beginning, when the song is like dramatic and drawn out, and then you've got a vocal that's going to come in soft and slow, it's just so overplaying that part that it doesn't work for me. But here in a spot like this, like where you've got the very controlled drum fills, by the way, by Greg Bissonette, because it's so tempting to overplay the song. But very controlled, very tasteful. I think it's okay in a spot like that, but it just dries up quickly for me. There's only so much of that I can take.
Greg Bissonette, I'm glad you called him out. One of my favorite all-time drummers. I love Greg Bissonette, and I'm worried for him because he's currently the drummer for Spinal Tap, and they don't have a good history with drummers. I'm hoping not. Greg pulls through. You can do it, Greg, but man, oh, and the drums sound great on this. Great production on this, produced by Bob Kulick. Fantastic job, Bob.
It almost sounds live.
Yeah, it really does. Surprised he was so restrained there.
This is the part of the song that fell flat for me. I had such high expectations for what this was going to be, and I'm like, oh, what just happened? Yeah. And it's not like I know what it could be. You guys know what it could be, and it wasn't it.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, he inverted it. Instead of going dream on, it was dream on. And that's different, but boy, this is the power part. You know, you really got to punch it here. So I didn't necessarily like that stylistic choice, but what I did like was these fills that we're hearing. This is exactly the kind of stuff I was talking about, where you could really take fills like that, dramatic, calculated, very careful precision fills, and just keep the song going for a good 3 or 4 extra minutes on stage. And Greg is nailing it here.
Got to do a show on this album. My God. I'm looking at No Surprise, one of my favorite Aerosmith deep cuts. Janie Lane from Ward, Chris Holmes, Adrian Perry, and Stephen Riley.
Mm.
That's good shit.
That was a haunting ending. It just seemed like more haunting than the studio version.
But I wanted Dio to get more Dio at the end, right? Like John said, like you have that big power portion that, you know, that's where Ronnie really could fucking let go. Right. And really let loose. And he kind of went the other direction. A little disappointed in that regard. But overall, a little bit we heard here, I thought it was a great cover.
Yeah, I did too. And, you know, I don't know if you guys know, but David Stone, who played keyboards on the Long Live Rock and Roll album with Ronnie, I'm in a band with him now. And when I interviewed him before I joined the band, he had nothing but the greatest things to say about Ronnie, not just as a singer, but as a person, the way that he treated David, the way that he treated the fans, just, you know, somebody that you definitely want to get to know and hang around with, because he was a pretty amazing guy. I'm really bummed I never got the chance to meet him.
All right. So you got a little bonus dream on here tonight, folks, from the likes of Ronnie James Dio, Yngwie Malmsteen, Stu Hamm, Greg Bissonette and Paul Taylor. John, let's wrap this sucker up. Anything you want to plug? Any last words on Dream On? You want to talk about mixtapes? You want to talk about Dio? Did you get to meet him? Are you in a band with anybody currently?
I did not. You know who I have met? Well, sort of met. I met him on my computer once. I'm reading these books. I got these books in the mail today.
Ooh.
It's this guy, Scott Cahaskins.
Right.
You know Scott,
I've heard of him. He writes a lot of erotic fan fiction, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He does. He wrote these three erotic books called The Universal Court, Book One, Book Two, and Book Three. And I'm currently about to start reading them, but they came in the mail today. So I gotta sit and make time and read, which is not my first language. But I will do my best. I will at least read the back covers first, because I like to read the ends before I read the rest of it. I got that from Billy Crystal in a movie once. But I recommend everybody goes to the Amazon and gets these books. You can fight off all the anacondas you need on that website. And you just look up Universal Court and Scott K. Hoskin and get yourself some books today.
Now, he wrote some books about Las Vegas, too, didn't he? Help me out here. I think there's a trilogy of books there, too.
I have these books right here. As a matter of fact, Corey, right next to me. And it's Scott K. Hoskin. What happened in Vegas? Scott K. Hoskin. What happened in Vegas? Part Deuce. And it's got a two of spades on the cover. It's got K. Hoskin. What happened in Vegas? Three of a kind, and it's three aces. And it is a trilogy of books about Vegas.
You get those on the Amazon as well, John?
I believe I did. I believe I did. I know the author, though, so I have some benefits that other people might not have in knowing the author. I still got them in the mail. And I highly recommend you buy yourself some Scott K. Hoskin books immediately and load your library up at home, or at least your coffee tables. I'm not even asking you to read them. Just buy them and put them on your coffee tables and pretend you read them.
That's what I intend to do. I'm never going to read them, but I'm going to have them. I even bought one on being a film composer from the same author. I'm not musically inclined in any way. I can't carry a tune and I can't write anything, but I'm going to read that book, because it sure sounded interesting and I like the author. But these Vegas books, I think, are going to be absolutely phenomenal. I ordered the same books as you did, John, because you recommended them. Customs currently in British Columbia has my books and they're inspecting them as we speak. I'm hoping they will release them sometime this week and I can maybe get these books next week.
Corey, you know what trick I try when I want to look smart and I have company coming over?
Mm-hmm.
I get my books that make me look really smart. And I'll either sit myself in front of my bookshelf, or I'll lay a bunch on the coffee table, or I'll throw one on the couch as if I was just reading it when they walked in. So having books is really important in your house to make you look smart.
Oh, that's a good idea. I'm totally going to do that with these books, because anyone sees these books, they're going to think, wow, this guy knows his stuff, because he's reading such an accomplished author. I got to admit, too, I even bought an extra set of books of the Universal Court series to put in my local library. Because I feel like where I live here in Canada, we're not cultured enough. And we need the important work of Scott K. Hoskin to help, get us out of the medieval times. And these books will help us do that. Scott, do you got anything you want to promote? I know you don't have much going on. I know you're unemployed. You don't really podcast. You just kind of lay around like a lump. Is there anything you want to talk about before we call it a night?
Well, I kind of feel like I've already dominated this show with all that kind promotion that you guys just gave me. Thank you very much. I hope from the bottom of my heart that you enjoy the books as much as you just boasted. Other than that, let's see. My new album, The Shattered Room, is out and available all over the place. I don't know if it'll be on Amazon or iTunes by the time this comes out, because I don't have any control over that, but it should. As well as my two podcasts, Uriah Heep, the Magician's Podcast that I mentioned earlier on the Deep Dive Podcast Network, and the Haskincast Podcast as well. All that can be found on my website, as well as links to the books and all the other things at scotthaskin.com. I even have a page for this very show.
That's right. You can go check out back episodes of Backtracks Aerosmith Revisited. This is show 54. Got a ways to go, but we're having a lot of fun doing it. So please go back, check out the back catalog. Go check out Scott Haskins' books and go bug John on social media just because he's a really cool guy and he'd love to chat with you. You can find him at John Marioni on Twitter. You can find Scott somewhere. He's not on Twitter anymore, so he's kind of dead to me. You can find
me on Instagram. Go find him on the Instagram.
Oh, okay.
Harass Scott on Instagram.
Does he post pictures of anything, John?
Nudes.
Oh, there you go. You want some nudes? Check out Scott Haskin on Instagram. You can check me out on Twitter and Instagram, at CD Morset, if you're so inclined. But until next time, on behalf of
Scott. That could be anybody's ass.
No, it can't. It's way too pimply. But on behalf of the pimple-ass Scott Haskin and John Mariano, my name is Corey Morset. Thank you very much for listening. And as always, let's give the final word to Steven Tyler.